My name's Chris Kirk, and this is TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 Weeks Edinburgh. I'm sitting in the Assembly Club bar. We're at the heart of the Edinburgh Fringe. It's happening all around us, and we're talking to some of our favourite Fringe performers who have shows at this year's festival. Today, Emma Holland, whose show The Dog Dies at the Start, good title, is on at Assembly George Square Studios. So let's get TW talking to Emma. So my next guest is with me. I've got her. Emma Holland has kindly joined me here in the Assembly Club bar with the festival happening around us, although it's quite early in the day for the Fringe, isn't it? So
I've been up since 7 a.m.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
That's an early rise for
Fringe. I'm doing a writing job while I'm here as well, and I'm working Australian hours.
So oh, wow.
Meetings at like 1 in the morning as well.
So you have two jobs in two different parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, one of them I'm getting paid for and one of them I'm maybe paying to do.
So hopefully the overnight job in Australia is paying for the Scottish time comedy show.
Absolutely. It's supplementing.
Well, the format here is past, present and future. We're going to talk about what's happening in Edinburgh right now in a moment. But before we get to present, let's do the past. So why don't you talk me through your journey in comedy? If I had to ask you where it began, let's pick a spot where your journey in comedy began.
Oh, my God. Do you know what? You're going to love this. It began when I started listening to podcasts, if you can even believe it.
Entered comedy through the world of podcasts.
Through the audio medium. I started listening to just like comedians and comedy podcasts in high school. And
those were comedians actually doing stand-up, or they were comedians bantering and chattering?
Started off with bantering.
Yeah.
And then through that got into listening to full sets.
Yeah.
And I did photography at university. So you have a lot of time in dark rooms on your own. So I would pop my headphones in, listen to like full comedy specials through my headphones.
And so give us the names of some of the comedians that you were listening to at that stage. So podcasting is a weird thing because there was various moments when podcasting was just taking off and then it didn't.
Yes.
And I guess probably about 10 years ago, it properly took off.
Yeah.
But in the we did the first 3 weeks podcast in like 2004 when literally nobody had the technology
to
listen to what we were publishing.
Oh my God.
Then late 2000s and then here in the UK, like Ricky Gervais and Adam Buxton started to get some. So where are we talking about approximate years?
This was probably 2014.
Right, so just 2016. As podcasting was, as people were starting to make money.
Yes, it was taking off. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of like specials I was listening to, Louis C.K., who also, by the way,
before cancellation, I think.
Yep. First time I ever saw a comedian ever do stand-up live was Louis C.K. in Chicago. So that paints a wonderful image. Nick Thune. I was listening to a lot of American comics, Tig Notaro, actually Simon Amstell as well. I got really into Simon Amstell. No Australians, though.
No Australians. Or Americans and occasional Brits.
Yes.
And were you going on that journey where you started listening to a couple of podcasts and then they had guests and then through that you
ended up... Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And I guess that... Actually, in the last year I've done that because I got a lot of American comedians in my feed at the after last year's Fringe.
Yeah.
I feel like this year I spent most of my year listening to American comedians. I'm glad to be back at the Fringe. I have seen some American comedians, but to see some British and some Australians and New Zealandites. Well,
yeah,
over here.
I've got across it. And some Lithuanians and Swedes.
Of course.
They're across.
From all over. So you were getting into comedy by listening to podcasts and then actually listening to stand-up routines, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point on this journey did you say, I could do that?
do you know, I actually don't remember. I just remember I took a gap year after university and I was like, I'm just going to try everything once and see what I like. And stand up was on that list. So I thought I was just going to do it once and like tick it off my bucket list kind of thing.
And where did you do the initial tick? Did you find an open mic night? Was that how you did it?
Yep. Canberra, Australia. The hotspot for comedy in the Southern Hemisphere, they call it. It was at a cafe called The Front Cafe. They had an open mic once a month. And I had emailed ahead to ask for a spot and I was so nervous about it that I went to the cafe that day to check there was an open mic that night to make sure I didn't show up to nothing. I emailed twice and be like, are you sure there's an open mic tonight?
So you're good on the admin.
Really? Which is crazy because now it's like the worst part of what I do. And then I just took a friend along and was like, pray for me and then just did it.
And so that was like a 5-minute spot?
Yep, 5 minutes.
And was it immediately obvious what you were going to talk about to you? Or did you have to really think, how do I construct this 5 minutes?
I had to think. And I had to like sit down and write it out. I spent like a month writing this 5 minutes and rehearsed it over and over and over. And it was mostly about work because I was working at a florist at the time. And so I mostly just talked about that.
Well, that's kind of interesting because rather than just the classic office job, that's a job where it's not what people are talking about all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you, you know, I didn't make this observation at the time, but I was like, what, in my early 20s then. I was working with women who were all between 35 to 50, and I've never experienced gossip like that. It was crazy. And they're like talking to me about each other. I'm being like, I'm barely an adult. You can't be doing this.
So you did the open mic night, and then you said originally it was just like, okay, I'm going to do this once. I'm a comedy fan.
Yep.
I'm going to tick it off the list.
Yep.
I guess once you did that, did you immediately get, oh no, I want to do this more often? Or was there at what point did you say, I'm ultimately going to end up at the Edinburgh Festival doing a full show?
Okay, that was not on my radar at all when I started. It was, I got like that buzz that you get when you do all right. And I was like, oh, that was really fun. But then the reason I kept doing it is because a bunch of the comics from Canberra introduced themselves to me afterwards and were so kind and nice and had such a sense of community that I was like, I was just desperate to be part of that community. So I just kept going back to gigs because I just wanted to hang out with these people.
And so what was your line you used for Canberra, the centre of...
The hottest spot of comedy in the Southern Hemisphere.
But if we were to assume that some people might think of Melbourne and Adelaide before they get to Canberra when it comes to comedy and arts.
Yeah.
What's the comedy scene like there?
There were 3 shows a month, including open mic, 2 open mics and 1 lineup show. And I reckon there are about 10 to 12 comics in the entire scene. But well-attended and very intelligent audiences because it's like a government kind of centre.
Yeah. So I guess not that many opportunities to perform, but a relatively small pool to start swimming in.
Yes. And and also a lot of freedom to expand creativity as well. Like I got to try some really weird stuff and it was just kind of accepted. It was great.
And so once you were sort of part of that community, did you then go through the classic, doing the 5 minute, the 10 minute, trying to go from the open mic to the regular night? Was that the sort of the route that you took?
Yeah. So I entered this competition called Raw Comedy in Australia. And I didn't really know much about the comedy scene there. So I entered it. I did very well in it. I came second nationally. And then I think that's when I kind of attended the Melbourne Comedy Festival, kind of realized what comedy was, started hearing about Edinburgh, because I actually didn't know what Edinburgh was. And that's what I think.
I guess you saw the business side now.
You had
a community in Canberra, but suddenly, totally. Oh my God, there's a comedy business as well.
Exactly. And I didn't realize I could make money yet. I didn't think that was a possibility. But I then ended up moving to Melbourne anyway for some other work, and then just started going to mics there, trying to get spots. Trying to get longer spots, trying to get paid for spots, and then slowly building up from there.
You mentioned your initial entry as a consumer of comedy, the fan of comedy, was through the podcast. And so did you then start doing your own online stuff as well as the live stuff?
No, I tried to do a podcast and hated it because I don't want to listen to myself talk for an hour. Which is literally what I'm doing.
But I think it's going well. But
I think it's going great. But I just felt like I didn't have... a perspective or point of view that was at the time worth sharing. I think maybe I have a different idea of that now.
Yes.
But I was like 22. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't know who I was or what the world was.
And the comedy podcast place has become very crowded.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So now you're in Melbourne. You've got the comedy festival happening there, slightly a bigger comedy scene. So I guess in terms of, you know, moving up, we'll come on to this year's show in a moment, but I guess in terms of moving to where you're confident enough to do the 1 hour, was that just, you know, slowly but surely, slightly longer sets, slightly bigger audiences, or did you take a leap at any point where it's like, no, now's the time?
No, it felt very gradual. And the year I was supposed to do my debut hour in Melbourne was COVID.
Oh.
So I'd written this full hour, it got cancelled.
So this is 2020?
2020.
Yeah. That scuppered you've been on a nice, steady grow.
Yeah, totally. And you feel, and especially when you're starting in Australia, there's like little milestones you can hit. And I felt like it had been interrupted.
Yeah.
But I'm actually really grateful that happened because I think the show was quite shit. Like looking back, I'm like, And like, then the show...
You got 2 years to sort of live with it.
But then my debut show, I also thought was quite shit. So I'm like, I actually wanted all of that early stuff out of the way as quick as possible. And then I felt like I started taking risks and doing more interesting things after all the like milestones were hit.
Yeah. You mentioned that first time at Melbourne Comedy Festival, you discovered this thing called the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yes.
The Edinburgh Festival. So I, at what point did you think, actually, that is now on my to-do list? That is a target. I want to go and do a show at Edinburgh.
I think pretty quickly. I think probably the year I did my debut show in Melbourne, I wanted, like, because I just loved performing for a month. Like, it's so fun. And I love the community of it. I love, like, being around comedians. And so... I wanted to come here and be like, I can do that twice a year now instead of just once a year. And it did, but it felt like a kind of a huge, like it's so far away and it felt so big and overwhelming. So it didn't seem like something that was a possibility for a long time. But it was something that I was like, I definitely want to do it at some point.
And it does feel, I mean, just given the number of Australian and New Zealand comedians that you get at the Fringe, it does feel, I mean, obviously for the UK comedy world, the Fringe is very much the epicenter island, I would say as well.
Yeah.
Maybe in the TikTok world, maybe it's changing, but certainly for the last 30, 40 years, for UK, Ireland, Edinburgh was absolutely at the centre. But it does feel like some American comedians come here and love it, but there are plenty of American comedians who probably have never even heard of it.
Mm.
Whereas it does feel for Australian comedians that actually it is an important part of growing what you do and your audience. And...
Yeah, it's almost like the North Star of like, if you can make it to Edinburgh, like you've really done something.
Yeah.
And if you do well in Edinburgh, that's like a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this year's Edinburgh Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the name of the show.
The show's called The Dog Dies at the Start.
So, yeah, explain that title.
Well, I kill the dog off in about 10 seconds of the show starting.
Whose dog?
My dog.
Your dog?
My dog died 2 years ago, and I couldn't believe how upset I was about it. It was crazy.
And how long did you have the dog?
Only 3 years.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't like...
Yeah, it wasn't like a childhood dog or anything, which is why I was so confused about how I felt that upset about it. And so I also was upset at how little media or like any... There just wasn't anything to validate how I was feeling. And so I wanted to write a show that would validate how I was feeling. And I'll tell you what, it's a hard sell. And I'm very aware of that.
When you say that, but so many people have pets. I mean, dogs, but other pets as well. And I think you're not the only person to experience that weirdly you've formed this bond and stuff.
Yeah.
It's, and even though, you know, realistically, at some point you're going to lose the pets. That's just life.
Totally. And I think some of my favorite comedy is, like, I'm a massive Mike Birbiglia fan.
Yeah.
And I think what I wanted to... do with this show is something he does where you just take like a microcosm of the human experience and just kind of elevate it across an hour. And I was like, I know this isn't like a dead dad show, I'm not trying to make it one, but it is something that people experience and I want to explore that and just kind of highlight little bits of like what it is to be a person over the course of an hour.
And to what extent is the show talking about your life with the dog and the experiences, or to what extent is that sort of something that you jump off with, but then, as you say, dog dies in a start of jail, and then you move on to many, many different topics.
So the show is mostly about the week afterwards.
Yeah.
I couldn't go back to my apartment. I like physically couldn't walk in.
Because you're associating it.
Yeah. And so I stayed at my parents' house for a week, and I've got very eccentric parents. I've got a very peculiar mother. So it's kind of about the week afterwards of how I was distracting and dealing with it. And I guess how my, like, especially mum kind of interweaved into that. And it's, yeah, mostly about that time at my folks' house.
And when you're doing a one-hour show like that, to what extent are you coming up with an idea, blank sheet of paper, you write an hour?
Yeah.
And to what extent are there stories, jokes, lines that you've used in sort of shorter sets that you're sort of bringing in?
Well, I've really changed how I write shows. I used to try and do like small sets across the year and weave them into an hour. And now it's very much, I will think of a concept and... if I have like one-liners in my phone, I try and figure them out. But a lot of it now is I write the hour and then test it out and work from there. And I'll tell you what, testing this show out was an absolute nightmare. Like trying to do 5 minutes about a dead...
Yeah, that's the challenge of that approach, isn't it? When you've written a solid hour of a beginning, a middle, an end and a story to tell, finding the 5 minutes you can do it at club.
Oh my God, I ate shit. And it was so good and so humbling because I was like, I haven't eaten shit at clubs in such a long time. But it all works in the show.
Yeah, I'm wanting to say, you know, if you saw this in the context of the hour, totally. It all makes sense.
And also a lot of my jokes are very visual. I have a visual arts degree, so I think I'm bound to want that visual element. And testing visual jokes is really hard in clubs as well.
When did you start testing the show?
November last year.
And do you have, I'm obviously testing little bits in the clubs is one way. Do you have the opportunity to sort of do work in progress, the full hour?
Yeah, a little bit. The Australian turnaround time is crazy because we have such a small audience pool that we're kind of expected to do a new hour every year just to keep like a fan base up.
Which is kind of, Edinburgh's good for that.
Yeah.
Edinburgh gives you the deadline.
Yeah, totally. But I did a couple work in progresses in January in Brisbane where I live. And after the first one, I was like, I'm not going to have a show this year. This is devastating. But it built up slowly. And I also think it does come with experience that you can trust yourself and back yourself and you're writing more and more. Like, this is my fifth hour. And I think across that, I've been able to test bits less and less and just rely on the show and contextualizing it in the show. Yeah. So it does feel easier in that sense. I do kind of wish I had maybe tested more in clubs in a way that worked just to make the material more punchy. But I think that also comes with doing it in Melbourne just because it's, 25 nights of doing it over and over again.
Yeah.
You do have the opportunity to, like, muck around with it. So by the time it gets to Edinburgh, it's like a fully formed show.
So we are about a week in.
Yeah.
It's quite funny, as we're recording this, it's Thursday of week one. And, like, on Tuesday, it's a classic thing, isn't it? I felt like I've been here for months.
Yeah.
And if actually, technically speaking,
it's been a week.
We've literally only just started.
I know. I looked at the calendar this morning and almost had a conniption.
So how has the first week gone?
Do you know what? It's been good. It took me a couple of days to figure out how to perform the show here because the audiences are so different. And then I feel like it clicked. And then I had some really, really good nights. And then last night I had an absolute stinker.
Just to explain, last night is what I call the week one Wednesday lull.
Yep.
Because we have the festival kicks off. Then we do all the ticket offers on the Monday, Tuesday.
We call it Suicide Wednesday.
Suicide Wednesday is another way of talking about it. And then that Wednesday night. And yeah, I saw three shows last night and one show. I felt really sorry for the comedian because I think it was a good show, but it felt quite awkward. And I could tell that she felt quite awkward.
Yeah. Do you know, something I'm really proud of is that I think I've trained myself now to be unreactive to a quiet audience and I still perform the show as I want to perform it.
Are there workshops for that? It occurred to me last night, you know how you can now go and do stand-up comedy workshops and training? There should be a workshop on how to deal with the four-person audience.
Well, I think that's what Edinburgh is. I think that is the workshop.
Oh, that's learning by doing.
On my first Edinburgh, I did a show to six people and 10 minutes before the end of the show, the woman in the front row just sighed, pulled out her phone and started ordering an Uber.
Oh my God.
Full screen brightness and then spent the rest of the show watching it arrive. And so when I'm doing shows like last night where I had like a full crowd, they didn't know who I was, they weren't into it. I just sit there being like, well, at least someone's not like, it's not that, you know, I've had my worst show. I can't possibly be that again.
Yeah. I remember, I've been covering the festival for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I remember many, 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 many years ago watching the comedian Dave Gorman doing a London preview. And it wasn't a very big audience. And he used to do this thing, I think that was that show that he did that year in Edinburgh, where every time people laughed, a big laugh, I think I'm remembering this right, he would put marbles in a bowl. And then at the end of the show, he would weigh the marbles.
That's...
And then compare to all the other shows he'd done.
Wow.
To say, see, you know, two nights ago, we got twice as many marbles. So this is on you. It's the same show.
I'm very big on not blaming the audience for... Like, because I think the people who came last night, they just weren't into it. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
They just didn't connect with the material.
Yeah,
I think there was a group of like 10 American high school students there.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this isn't going to be for you, is it? But there is part of you that wants to be like, why are you here? Well, that demon inside, you just want to squash down.
We always say at the Fringe, isn't it, you should take a punt on a show that's maybe not for you, and maybe everybody last night was doing that. But we know that there are lots of people here who also are desperately trying to see your sorts of show.
Yeah.
Getting them in the room.
And there was a little pocket. There was about five people on the side, and normally what I would do is try and fixate. There were two people in the front row who had such stone-cold faces the whole time. To make myself feel better mid-show, I just told myself they were German. That made me feel a lot better. But there was a pocket of people and I'm have trained myself now to refocus on them.
Yeah.
They're like, they paid to see this show. They're enjoying
it. Yeah.
They
still Let's give them the best experience. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the one bad audience out of the way. So you've now got 20 nights left of perfect audience.
And it's going to be amazing.
I am sure. So let's very quickly think about the future. So you're here for the rest of the month,
yes.
I think, here for the full festival. And then is the plan then, do you then take this show and do more touring in Australia? Or what's the plan for this show?
I think the show's done after Edinburgh.
This is the peak, having done it in Melbourne.
Yeah, I've already toured it in Australia. And I also think it's a show that maybe just lives in festivals. I don't think it's a tourable hour.
So are there any other comedy festivals, fringe festivals that you either do go to or would like to go to?
I do all the Australian ones, like Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney.
But usually you do those that lead up to Edinburgh rather than after it.
Totally, yeah. But I'm taking next year off of writing a show because the pace is... It's unsustainable.
Yeah.
One show a year for the past 5 years is not... I need to have some experiences and have something to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take some time off and maybe work on some, like... I love writing. Writing's, I think, where my, like, real love is. So I want to do some, like, screenplays and...
Oh, cool.
And such.
And some things that other people might perform.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's do the plugging of the show and then the socials. So remind us the name of the show and then tell us the venue, the time, etc.
It's called The Dog Dies at the Start. It's 9:20 p.m. at Assembly Studio 4. And what I didn't emphasize is that it's really funny. it's really funny, I promise.
The death is over in 10 seconds.
Genuinely.
From that point onwards.
First 5 minutes, the hard bit's out of the way. And then it's just like, it's the absurdity of that week that I went through. And you can find me on social media. I'm E.Maholland because someone took Emma Holland. And I'm just kind of around. If you see me around, we can chat.
And that's on any platform where you might want to check.
Yeah. And if you recognize my voice from the podcast, come and say hi.
Well, thank you for joining us. Have a good rest of the festival.
Will do. Obviously, I will.
Of course.